What is the future of healthcare here on the First Coast and around the country? We'll take a closer look just ahead. Good morning. And live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the podcast on iTunes or listen through the WJCT app. You can also stream us live now on our Facebook page. And just ahead, a big conference coming up next week in Jacksonville to discuss the future of healthcare. 549-2937 to weigh in on that. Then later, how to prevent the tragedy of children drowning on the First Coast. Plus, author Isaac Lidsky and some winning students from Stanton Prep, all of that ahead. But first this hour, the Senate is expected to take up a new health reform measure this week, and Republican senators are grappling with a problem. How can they find consensus between their moderate and conservative wings on health care while at the same time still managing to get the 50 votes they need to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act? So far, the GOP Healthcare Working Group, a block of 13 senators, has already encountered some of the same problems that hindered the House's efforts on healthcare reform. They struggled for weeks to collect enough votes to pass. Now, all of these issues will be discussed at a local conference on the future of healthcare. We are taking a look ahead to that right now as we welcome Brian Campbell, CEO of the Duval County Medical Society. Good morning.
Good morning.
And on the line, Dr. Sunil Joshi, Foundation President of that same society. Doctor, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
And here's our question to callers. Certainly, Republicans and Democrats in Washington are heavily focused on the Russia investigation. You've been hearing a lot about that, but they're doing other things too. And one of them has to do with health care. What are your thoughts, your questions, and your reactions to the Senate's efforts to pass a health care package? It could radically overhaul our current system yet again. Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax or weigh in on Facebook. Dr. Joshi, let's begin with you. This Future of Healthcare conference is coming up next week at UNF. But in the meantime, is the society watching the action in Washington pretty closely to see what the Senate might come up with when it comes to changing healthcare and how we are insured?
Oh, absolutely, we are, because we are somewhat disappointed with the House plan at this point, because there's, you know, in that plan, suddenly, you know, the ability for insurance companies to discriminate against those with pre-existing conditions comes back into play, and that, of course, will then leave millions of people without health insurance again, or make it unaffordable for millions of people as well. And so, yeah, we definitely have an eye on what the Senate is up to, and we're hoping for substantial changes in the bill.
All right. Brian Campbell, what about that? Because there is a rift between the more moderate Republicans and the more conservative Republicans in the Senate when it comes to how to, in particular, as Dr. Joshi said, how to cover people with a pre-existing condition. In fact, Senator Bill Cassidy, a Republican from Louisiana, took to the Senate floor earlier this week to try to make the case that the Senate bill needs to protect those pre-existing conditions, something he called the Kimmel test. That was the viral video when Jimmy Kimmel went on late night TV and talked about his son's surgery and said how important it is that everyone have access to that level of care. So how significant do you think this will be? And can they come to agreement on this?
Well, I mean, that's the big question. Can they come to an agreement? Of course, that is the central issue. And the Duval County Medical Society, along with all of organized medicine, all the way up to the American Medical Association, have really made this a central point, that this is about access to care. It's not about access to insurance. It's not about access. You know, there's a difference. Just because you have insurance doesn't mean that you have access to care. And so, first of all, we need to make sure that people with pre-existing conditions do have access to the insurance and the care that they need. But one of the issues that we have had struggled with the Affordable Care Act that currently is in place is access to insurance doesn't necessarily mean access to care. The number of physicians who provide Medicare and Medicaid services have been reduced because of the reimbursement that is involved with those services. You have a state like Florida who did not expand their Medicaid under that rule. So you have a significant number of individuals who do not have access to insurance or therefore care. they still can go to the emergency room and get services. UF Health Jacksonville continues to be an amazing safety net hospital, where more than half of the people that come in the door are underinsured or uninsured to this day. And, you know, that is a critical component, not just the access to care, but making sure that those services in our community that provide something that no one else can maintain the funding that they need to be able to take care of it. So it's all of these pieces together that make it such a complex puzzle to unwind. And so the question was, do I think that they'll be able to figure it out? Who knows? Because it is possibly the most complex puzzle that they've had to ever figure out.
Sure. And Dr. Joshi, the House, several attempts made by the House of Representatives before they passed something, the reconciliation process between the House and the Senate is sure to be a difficult one. What are you hoping to see come out of this legislation? And how do you think the Republicans in the Senate can find a way to, as Brian said, reconcile all of these complex moving parts?
Of course, politics is tough. You know, people having to work together for any reason, but in particular for healthcare. You know, our position in organized medicine has always been that there really should not be politics involved in the health of a community or of a nation. And so what we need is for the Senate to work with the House to have some sort of a bipartisan solution so that American families can access affordable care, meaningful coverage, and protect our safety net hospitals, as Brian talked about. It's so critical, especially here in Northeast Florida, that our safety net hospitals are appropriately funded, because without them, you want to talk about issues of access to care, it'll affect people even with insurance if we start to have issues with our safety net hospitals. So we're hoping that we can get some bipartisan togetherness, you know, where people are working together to do something that's in the benefit of the American people and American families.
What's been passed so far, though, Brian, has not been endorsed by the nation's doctors. The American Medical Association strongly opposed the measure that went through the House.
Right.
They supported the Obama-era Affordable Care Act after a lot of negotiations, of course. Will the AMA take another stand against whatever legislation is going to come out of the Senate?
So appreciate that question. It's an excellent one. First of all, the American Medical Association has made a stand, and not just a stand of opposition, but a stand of principles of what healthcare reform needs to include, including access to care, including appropriate reimbursement, including making sure that this is not just an insurance bill or a doctor bill or a patient bill, but one that takes into consideration the entire healthcare system. And that's one of the reasons you mentioned our Future of Healthcare conference next week. We're actually bringing in the president-elect of the American Medical Association, who helped to craft that statement and helped to craft that position, and who honestly will be at the helm of the world's largest group of physicians as this bill moves through Congress and you know, take some sort of final form. So we're excited to have him here in Jacksonville to speak to the community directly on what his plans are to ensure that patients, the physicians, and the entire healthcare system are taken care of in that solution.
Dr. Joshi, that should be a very closely attended and watched keynote talk, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. And so, yeah, President-elect Barb will be speaking on Monday night, this coming up Monday at UNF at 7:30, about these topics in particular and how organized medicine can work to improve the health of a community. And so, yes, absolutely, we're looking forward to his words and his leadership in regards to the American Health Care Act.
And what are your thoughts about the American Health Care Act? What would you like to see passed? 549-2937. Give us a call. Let's go to Bill in Mandarin now. Hi, Bill. Good morning.
Hey, just a little commentary, long story short. When this thing was all being cobbled together several years ago, there were three competing thoughts. The single pay, the VA approach, which has been pretty successful, and then the insurance company's approach. The single pay was discarded because it's considered too un-American, and the VA approach was not considered very little. The insurance company said, yes, we can take it, we can make sure it works and make it go and stuff like that. Well, look where they've left us, in absolute shambles. That's just my thought. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, thank you, Bill. And by the way, let me ask you as a follow-up, guys. The other day, the CEO of Aetna went on the record and said, it's time we have a real discussion about single-payer health care in this country. Here's a tweet about this from Adam. New York and California are proposing single-payer systems for their states. It works in most other first world countries and can work here. It's the future. Agree or disagree?
Well, go ahead, well, Dr.
Dr. Joshi.
I mean, I think the way people do it in other countries is not necessarily the best way to do things either. You know, you can go there and hear a lot of potential, you know, negatives about those systems. You know, so no, I'm not sure that that's the best answer. You know, a single payer system may take care of some of our issues, but I think it'll open up a whole Pandora's box of other issues as well that may come up. And so, again, you know, looking at the whole picture, not necessarily, you know, crafting it the same way other countries have done it, but doing it in a bipartisan fashion that makes most parties happy, I think, is the way to proceed.
Brian.
So I think Dr. Joshi makes a great point. One of the things that American medicine has is that it has almost unquestionably the best and brightest physicians in the world. You see world leaders and people coming from around the world to take part in American medicine to get services and treatment here from countries that have single payer systems. And I'm not saying that every single payer system will have rationing or some of the other things that are put as, you know, when people decry single payer systems. But whatever we move towards, we have to ensure that that American ingenuity and the ability for American physicians to go above and beyond and take that next layer of medicine and take it to the next level and continue to innovate and expand, that has to be inherent in the system. Because if we take away that incentive that we do currently have, we are the world leader in that, and we don't want to take that away.
Right. And that's certainly been the American tradition for many, many years. That said, and I'm going to quote here from the CEO of Aetna. He was in a closed-door meeting, but it was reported that he said, single payer, I think we should have that debate as a nation. This after Aetna announced it would pull out of the last two states where it was participating in the Obamacare exchanges. And he was, Dr. Joshi, he was asked whether he thought that the Republican health plan might pave the way eventually to a single-payer system. And the CEO of Aetna later said he wasn't advocating for a single-payer system, but indicating his openness to have that conversation. Let me ask you, Dr. Joshi, if the Republican plan cannot make all its way through the process and more insurers pull out of these exchanges and access to care diminishes, what's the scenario we might then be looking at as a way forward?
Well, of course, that's a scenario we don't want to have to deal with. But if it does come up, obviously, you know, a single payer system is up for debate, and that's what makes America great, is we can discuss the good and the bad of each of these particular issues. But again, it's just like, you know, that seems like a really easy solution, and that easy solutions are not going to work with such a complicated system that we have in place right now. And so, you know, as Brian said, you know, we have people coming here from all over the world to access care in this country. We need to figure out a way to make it so that the people here can access that care without necessarily going down that line.
All right, let's go to Ricky on the north side now. Hi, Ricky. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello? Yeah, I'm trying to find out what's the status thus far with this initiative for the folks that are on Medicaid, you know, the particularly the children and the elderly, because the system is wanting to totally eliminate Medicaid, and many of the states are also in favor of eliminating Medicaid. So I'm wondering about what's the status with that. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Ricky. Yeah, and the Medicaid piece has not been easy for the Senate and the House either. They're not on the same page, the more moderate Republicans and the more conservative Republicans, about Medicaid.
Right.
What are your thoughts there?
So again, and the caller asked the question correctly, right, because this becomes a state issue, Medicaid with the federal funding distributed at the state level. And the state has made a couple of stands. The state has decided that they would not expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. And so that reduced the number of people that have access, and that reduced the amount of money coming to the state. In addition to that, you have the state looking at different ways, managed care, other options to manage Medicaid within the state of Florida. You know, from a provider standpoint, from a physician standpoint, from a medical office standpoint, Medicaid isn't necessarily the best answer because it pays essentially less than the cost of providing the service. But again, you know, I mentioned UF Health Jacksonville, where a Medicaid reimbursement is certainly better than no reimbursement. And so, you know, I always say some is better than none. And so making sure that system maintains and stays in place to make sure that we take care of those that for whatever reason do not have the other insurance products that are out there can get the coverage and that mm-hmm. at least something goes back to the system and the provider to keep it sustained.
Let's go to Tim in Orange Park. Hi, Tim. Good morning.
Good morning. I was just wondering if all the states that were available to, if all the states that opted in for the Affordable Health Care Act, would we even have half the issues that we have right now? Thank you.
Okay, if there were more opt-in. Dr. Joshi.
If more of the states had opted in, is that what the question was from the caller?
I mean, not all of the states expanded Medicaid. Maybe that's a more relevant question.
I mean, I think that's the better question. Yeah, absolutely. So if Medicaid had indeed been expanded, like for instance in Florida and some of the other states, that certainly would have helped significantly at covering some of our children. But even in that scenario, the states that did expand Medicaid have incredibly high coverage now for children. And this is one of the concerns with the American Health Care Act that the House is pushing through, is that it does appear that we would lose a lot of that coverage. And that in itself is a bad policy for children, dangerous for the rest of us as well. Kids are not covered appropriately for health care. So yes, I do think that if Medicaid was expanded appropriately, that certainly could have made a difference, especially for children, but not necessarily for everyone else. Because as Brian said, Medicaid itself does not pay as well as some of the other insurance companies, even Medicare to some extent.
Yeah, but when the Supreme Court upheld the Affordable Care Act, Brian, Chief Justice Roberts left the Medicaid piece optional for the states. In the long run, do you think that was a good decision or not?
Well, I mean, that's certainly a loaded question. I mean, there were Republicans who felt that he betrayed the party by even allowing
allowing it to stand at all. Yeah.
That's correct.
He sort of split the difference.
That's right. And, you know, I think that truly, when you look at what Medicaid is, he upheld the Constitution and the law. Medicaid is a states' rights issue, and he allowed the states to have the option and did not force the funding and the expansion upon them. But then on the flip side, did it create the situation where we were in an inevitable collapse of the system as a result? Possibly. But I think that, you know, you alluded to the CEO of Aetna earlier. I think that one of the other things that you're looking at is that the concept of the insurance exchanges possibly has also been an unsustainable model. And then you look at the levels of insurance provided under the exchange, which are the bronze and the silver and the gold. You know, people, the bronze packages are, quote, affordable, but the amount of care that they provide is not necessarily what some people think that they're getting in a product. So you still have potential surprise out-of-pocket expenses. So I think that there are many, many elements that potentially could have meant we were going to get to this place no matter what, including just the acerbic reaction of the Republican Party to the fact that any health care bill passed. We might have been in this position from a political standpoint, regardless of what the actual impact of the bill was, quite honestly.
And Dr. Joshi, what about the backlash on this? When the Obama administration was pushing through its health reform package, there was furious backlash. Town halls across the country were just rocking with rage. And now we're seeing the same thing, but in reverse. Now it's the Republican members of Congress that are facing angry constituents at town halls saying, don't take away what we have. There's such a fear that millions of Americans are going to lose whatever skimpy insurance they do have.
Right. And I think that a lot of the concern that you hear at town halls and from people, whether it was from Obamacare, you know, eight, 9 years ago, or what's coming through the GOP here, is that these things seem to get pushed through so quickly, you know, and there's so much information in these bills that it's impossible for them all to have read through the whole thing. They just simply vote down party lines, and it makes us feel very uncomfortable that, you know, we haven't had a chance to review it, and certainly they haven't had a chance to review it, and so these things are getting approved through partisan politics without people really knowing what's in them. And then we go through the damage after it's already occurred. And I think that's why people are so frustrated, is that, you know, we've elected these individuals to pass the bills that are in the best interest of most people, and they're passing bills that they haven't even read. And I think that's where the anger is coming from.
John in San Marco. Go ahead, John.
Good morning, Melissa. This is John Hancock. And if I had known this was going to be such a big issue, I would have put it in the Declaration of Independence to begin with.
Okay. Well, you had a good signature on that document, I have to say.
It was an interesting time, and we're still in interesting times.
And Melissa, your longevity is amazing. You must have really good insurance.
I have no health care insurance for many years, but
oh,
I pay
really?
Cash.
Okay.
I pay cash. Melissa, you'll fix this, but a few weeks ago...
No, I will not. I wish. But go ahead.
You're going to fix this, what I'm about to say.
Okay.
St. Vincent's, you advertised that they were doing free health care for human beings. And it made a huge difference in my life last year, and then I only remembered because you announced it. But then also...
yeah, they had that free day of care. Yeah, right.
I took a friend that was 21, and she has nothing. And when we left, all she had was a few medicines. Simple. They cost pennies. So I encourage the conversation to go to the doctors and nurses and health caregivers to say they've had enough. Most of them want to help people, and it's not about money.
Thanks, John. Yeah, thank you for that. And he's referencing a recent day of free health care to anyone who needed it that St. Vincent's did downtown. And it every year when that type of situation is offered, it's clear how great the need is for people to get. They don't have. There's expanded access to care, Brian, but we're not nearly all of the way to where I think health professionals think we need to be in this country.
Well, that's absolutely true. And that's one of the things that it's inspiring to work with the physicians of the Duval County Medical Society. You know, we have hundreds of members that volunteer their time at St. Vincent's, at other hospitals, providing volunteer care. We have WeCare, which is a great service here in Jacksonville, and Volunteers in Medicine. Absolutely, which are physicians volunteering their time. And that is up to 200% of the poverty level. People are eligible to participate in those services because, again, for one reason or another, some people just don't have the insurance or the coverage or the Medicaid or the Medicare to take care of it. And the physicians at their heart, they all want to, this caller's right, they want to take care of patients, and that's what's most important to them, and that is what brings them satisfaction.
On our Facebook page, Jay writes, there are intractable, well-moneyed forces at play in maintaining the status quo in our healthcare system. If we went to single payer or some hybrid system with private insurance options, that could put millions of people in the health insurance field out of work. The other problem is our healthcare system as a whole is the most expensive, but not really the best. How do we get the cost of care down and drive up quality? Every other country has done it. I don't care if we're bigger than France. We can find a way to make it work. And I'll get both of your reactions to his comment, too, in just a moment. But right now, let's go to Marty in Orange Park. Hi, Marty. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thanks. Go ahead.
Okay. My question is, situation, many of the children in our state, in our country, with orphan diseases that don't qualify for Medicaid, this ACA, these plans that create pre-existing that cover pre-existing conditions and limit caps for people who are stuck on private insurance, keep them alive. When we remove these things, when you have a critically ill child on life support, what happens when they've capped out, when we can no longer cover them and they don't qualify for Medicaid? The state of Florida doesn't cover Katie Beckett home-based waivers. Do we put them in institutions? I mean, what does the future look like here for my child, our children?
Yeah, thanks, Marty. Dr. Joshi.
Well, I mean, that's a good question. What happens when you go over your limits? And I don't think we have a good answer for that. I mean, it's very similar to what happens now. I mean, you know, your child or you know, any individual will still receive care in this country. It just won't get paid for, you know, and that's what happens right now at a lot of the safety net hospitals or even some of the other hospitals in town. And so so that doesn't necessarily mean that you or your child cannot be cared for. It's just how does that care get paid for without the country losing millions of dollars, I think is where the issues lie.
And I wanted to address, I believe it was Marty from Orange Park and his question. So I think the first thing I would like to say is I generally will contest the question of our healthcare isn't necessarily better. I think he's referring to statistics that show that life expectancy in the United States is not the same as others. And so those overall health rankings don't equal that. But that's something that, Melissa, you and I and your viewers have talked about before. For example, with the county health rankings here in Jacksonville, it's not necessarily just the healthcare. It is the obesity rate and the amount of diabetes, which certainly is something that physicians are involved in. And, you know, the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists, based right here in Jacksonville, actually, physicians that deal with that. But if someone goes to their doctor, gets advice about their diabetes, and then walks out the door and gets 3 triple cheeseburgers at McDonald's, there is an accountability there that isn't necessarily on the provider. We've also talked about issues, built environment and access to physical places where you can play, food deserts, which are huge issues. All of these things are not just part of the healthcare system. They're part of the community as a whole. And there's something that as a society, we have put on a pedestal and we have built our society around those things, which impact the overall health outcomes. That's one of the reasons why Mayor Curry and Dr. Joshi have worked to put the Future of Healthcare Conference together, because we're not just addressing the Affordable Care Act or, you know, the American Healthcare Act with the American Medical Association. We're also going to be talking to the Surgeon General of the state, the Director of the Health Department. We're going to be talking to the state senators and local leaders, the mayor, talking about all of those things, the built environment, everything that contributes to the health outcomes here in Jacksonville.
Right.
Because what we know is you, me, Dr. Joshi, even Mayor Curry, we're probably not necessarily going to be able to turn the tide in Washington, D.C. on this vote. It's going to happen the way that it's going to happen. But what we can do is we can turn our forces and look inward and figure out how we can come together to help improve the health of this community.
And lots of people tweeting and calling. We could keep going and going. I would read all of the tweets, but they're all pretty much of the same narrative, wanting you both to know that... Well, at least the people tweeting us right now want to see a solution on this. And with all of that said, this is coming up next week, May 22nd and 23rd at the UNF University Center, the Future of Healthcare Conference, with the president-elect of the American Medical Association, among others, a very important event. And so, gentlemen, we thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us, Melissa. And we hope to see you there and so that we can talk about what we're doing to make Jacksonville a healthier place.
And that's Dr. Sunil Joshi and Brian Campbell, both with the Duval County Medical Society. Much more still ahead. Meanwhile, later, best-selling author Isaac Lidsky here in town. More on his remarkable story. But up next, preventing your child from drowning in Jacksonville. Simple steps every family should follow. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
When you look closely at the microeconomics of families in this country, you can learn a whole lot about the macroeconomics as well.
We think in America that what matters most is mobility. Right now, what matters most for a lot of people is stability.
I'm Kai Rizdal, the Financial Diaries of American Families. That is next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Behind the many pipeline protests at Standing Rock was a determined group of teens.
We don't want to be victims anymore because we've been victims for a really long time.
They sparked a national movement and got support from a president.
He had tears in his eyes, him and Michelle, after hearing all of our stories.
The children of Standing Rock on the next Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Next time on Jazz Night in America, we're bringing you London's top jazz talent via Austin, Texas. South by Southwest has become the place to showcase new music and tech from across the globe, and jazz isn't typically on the bill, but London's new crop of artists infusing jazz with electronics, house music, and grime are changing that. That's on the next Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Fatal drowning is the leading cause of death for kids 1 to 4 years old and the second leading cause of death for older children. But participation in water safety and swim lessons can go a long way toward reducing that risk of drowning if you have a very young child. And of course, here in Florida, swimming lessons are so important. So says one local survivor of childhood drowning. He's Josh Harrison, Vice President, MRFCO, Florida. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning.
And also with us in studio, Cindy Partee, Aquatics Director at the Winston Family YMCA. Good to see you.
Hi.
Thanks for being with us. All right, Josh, you're a big advocate for drowning prevention, and you've even worked with the West Rotary to make a big donation to the WISE Safety Around Water program. This all goes back to your story. You survived a childhood drowning, is that right?
Yes. Yes, I grew up here locally in Orange Park, and kind of funny how it all came about. My co-sponsor in this, Mary Pat Wollmeyer, with the West Jacks Rotary, was teaching swim lessons at the YMCA, and our club actually helped sponsor the drowning prevention program. We've had partners like Firehouse Foundation and communities and schools, along with other Rotary clubs throughout the city, partnering with one of the best organizations to teach swimming, the YMCA, in my opinion.
And what happened to you as a kid?
So it was actually my mother's birthday in 1983. My aunt was over visiting with one of my first cousins, and they were getting ready to leave, and we physically broke him out of his car seat and ran down to Doctor's Lake to hide, to really try to stay together. Uh-huh. And we eluded our friends, neighbors. There were 15 to 20 people looking for us for a very long time. And he jumped into a canoe, and I tried to jump off a dock and try to get in the canoe and didn't make it. And he was 4 and I was 3.
Oh, wow.
About 15 minutes after that, people started screaming, and neighbors finally caught up to us. Fortunately for me, a doctor 2 streets over heard people yelling for help, came and pulled me out of the water and resuscitated me.
So you were lucky.
I was very, very lucky.
Yeah. And every summer, though, we hear these tragic stories, Cindy, of families that weren't that lucky. And so that is why swimming lessons and the WISE Safety Around Water program is critically important. My kids learned to swim at the Y. Can you tell us a little bit about this program and how parents can access it for their kids?
Yeah, we started it at the Winston YMCA, and it has blown up from there. Josh has been very instrumental in helping us get it going. We've been supplying swim lessons to at-need children or at-risk children throughout Jacksonville. We've been trying to partner with schools, both public and private schools, and we bus the children in the afternoons, and we give them the lessons. And if people want to get involved in it, they can definitely lobby with their school to try and get them to partner with us, but we are slowly and meticulously reaching out to every school throughout Jacksonville.
Oh, that's great. And by the way, this just crossed, the St. Johns County Sheriff's Office has just found a body a mile north of the St. Augustine Inlet in Volano Beach. You know, Josh, I mean, these are headlines that, especially mm-hmm. in the summer, almost every week mm-hmm. you see this. So this type of access to swimming education is so important.
Well, it's I believe in education. And, you know, again, the WISE identified and I think leads the nation in educating families, and it doesn't have borders, socioeconomic, logistical borders. They go to every corner of the city or county that they're serving. And my story, I think, helps. You know, it was hard on my folks. I had some learning difficulties to overcome when I was young. And again,
because you lost oxygen when you were in the water.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Ma'am. Yeah. So, you know, not only being found by a doctor, but being intubated in the ambulance, being seen by an advanced cardiac surgeon. When I arrived downtown and was life-lighted, I was in an induced coma for 4 days. All the while, my mom was there. My father was actually serving in the Navy halfway around the world, so he didn't know if I was alive or dead for 2 days.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, and you just don't want any family to go through this, and it's so easily avoidable, Cindy. So let's explain again how people can get involved in safety around water through the Y.
So there's multiple ways to get involved. If you have children, get them over to the Y. We have ways to help you afford it if you can't afford the lessons. Work with your school to help them partner with us. And then on an even bigger scale, you don't have kids or your kids have already learned to swim, come meet with us and help the other children get lessons. You can donate. You can learn to be a swim instructor and help us teach those swim lessons.
Oh, there
There's a multitude of ways to get involved.
That might be fun, actually.
Right.
And just go to firstcoastymca.org. Correct. And locations all over town.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have 13 pools throughout Jacksonville and Clay County.
Such a timely message. And thank you so much for being with us. Josh Harrison, Vice President at MRFCO and a spokesperson for safety around water. And Cindy Partee, Aquatics Director at the Winston Family Y. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk about voting rights and restrictions with Ari Berman, senior contributing writer at The Nation and author of Give Us the Ballot. We'll discuss President Trump's new Election Integrity Commission, voter ID laws on the 2016 election, recent court rulings on voting restrictions, and why voting rights have become a partisan issue. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
There was a hard knock at the door in the middle of the night. Three men in the military uniform, the KGB major, handed me a warrant for my arrest.
Join us for stories of Soviet interrogations, community builders, and Arctic explorers. That's next time on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Join WJCT for Be My Neighbor Day, Saturday, June 3rd from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the WJCT studios. The day will include family-friendly activities, PBS Kids characters, food trucks, and so much more. The event is free, but reservations are required. For more information, log on to wjct.org/events.
Welcome back. Well, best-selling author and TED speaker Isaac Lidsky is coming to town. He'll share his inspirational story at an event at Intuition Ale Works on May 22nd. Now, Lidsky is 37, and he's also blind. He was born with retinitis pigmentosa. It's a rare degenerative disease of the retina, and from age 12 to 25, Isaac slowly lost his sight. Over the years, Isaac has been everything from a child television star, he's been on Saved by the Bell, to a Supreme Court clerk, yeah, for Justices Sandra Day O'Connor and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And he's the co-founder of an internet startup. Now, Isaac will be sharing his insights about the foundation of his new book, Eyes Wide Open, Overcoming Obstacles and Recognizing Opportunities in a World That Can't See Clearly. Isaac Lidsky is on the phone now with a preview. Isaac, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
What a life you've had. I mean, everything you've done already, and you're just getting started. You've been a television star, a Supreme Court clerk. Now you're a best-selling author. You've given this amazing TED Talk. What drives you?
You know, I've been very blessed, as you said, to have a lot of very different and fantastic experiences in my life. Chief among them was the experience I had going blind over about a dozen years, as you said, sort of progressively losing my sight. And in the beginning it was terrifying and awful, and it certainly was a challenging process. In a beautiful way, it turned out to be one of the best things that ever happened to me. And the insights that I gained as I slowly lost my sight really formed the foundation of a very blessed life. It enabled me to live a life of immeasurable joy and fulfillment and success.
What insights did you gain by that really difficult situation?
You know, I literally saw firsthand in several interesting ways that, in every moment, we choose who we are and how we want to live our life. It's our ultimate power, and it's our inescapable responsibility. And whether we like it or not, whether we want to believe it or not, whether we want to admit it to ourselves or not, we're making those choices in every moment. And once you kind of see that, it's empowering and liberating. And we have this awesome. The mind is just infinitely powerful.
And did you find that your mind compensated for the loss of eyesight in unexpected ways?
Absolutely. So the human organism is so adaptable, and we can get so much information from our other senses. We usually just don't bother to ask them because we're inherently visual creatures. So yeah, I learned to get a lot more from my eyes, from touch, from all those things. But really, even more than that, sort of beyond blindness or even sort of overcoming disabilities, what I learned is that so much of our lives. Really so much of the reality we experience is really within our control. It's sort of machinations of our own mind. And it doesn't always seem that way, it doesn't always feel that way, but when you can kind of take control and see the ways in which you are literally shaping the life you live, it's awesome because you can start to choose, how you want the contours of that life to emerge.
Now, your journey has been so remarkable because, as I said, you've given this amazing TED Talk. You've been on national TV. You clerked at the Supreme Court. A really fascinating array of experiences. How did all of those come your way?
You know, at the core of living and leading, eyes wide open, really is the idea that only you can define your success and what value looks like to you and what your priorities are and how you want to be spending your time. And I've really sort of tried to put my money where my mouth is on that front and throughout my life in different sort of chapters, with shifting priorities and sort of shifting family dynamics, I've been able to, not reinvent myself, but certainly kind of enter new chapters. And it's been a heck of a ride, but really more than any of the sort of accomplishments or sort of results or outcomes. It's really the process itself, the journey, the sort of actual striving in which I find, the sort of the best parts of life reside.
You're going to talk about this clarity of vision that you want to share with others. What a privilege for people here in Jacksonville. Speaking next Monday night at Intuition Aleworks, that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm really excited. Mark Lowry and his team at Jackson Refrigeration, are sponsoring the event and brought me in, and I love the opportunity. This, my book and my message really is a passion project. It's a labor of love, and I'm always excited to share it with folks.
Come on out and meet the fascinating Isaac Lidsky at Intuition Aleworks, Monday, May 22nd. Event kicks off at 5 o'clock. His book, Eyes Wide Open, and so much to learn from him, and such a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for being with us, and have fun when you visit town.
Thank you so much. Pleasure's mine.
And in a moment, the Smarty Pants of Stanton. They won big. We'll tell you how.
On the next Radio Lab.
State police cars parked almost as far up.
Story of a serial killer.
I've killed before, and I'll kill again.
Many deputies standing by.
His righteous lawyer.
People saying, how can you live with yourself?
Shabby subversion of the law and of justice.
Bodies used as pawns in a game of law.
And a dangerous secret. that set a precedent.
The conflict between what a good lawyer should do and what a good person should do.
That's on the next Radio Lab.
Saturdays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, the website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's modern guide for adulthood, part 2.
If you're looking for the best in classic and modern blues, tune in every Monday and Wednesday night at 11 right here on 89.9 for Blues Horizon. From the artists you know to the artists you should know, Blues Horizon collects the best of a legacy of music that spans the century. As part of WJCT's After Hours, Blues Horizon, every Monday and Wednesday night at 11 right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music. Is
it the truth? Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, the Smarty Pants at Stanton, well, they won big. Yes, at the recent Academic World Quest competition in Washington, the students of Jacksonville's own Stanton Prep placed 7th out of 47 teams, securing a spot in the top 10. The Stanton team, titled Hoosier Baghdaddy, is represented by Ashley Malone. Hi, Ashley.
Hi.
Arvind Sami, good morning, Arvind.
Hi.
Walker Miller, he's the junior in the group, correct?
Yes, thanks for having us, Melissa.
And Haley Lee rounds out this foursome.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, kids. How are you?
We're good.
Congratulations, by the way. This is so exciting. You guys placed in the top 10 at this Academic World Quest National Competition. Very, very impressive. How exciting was it?
I mean, it was pretty exciting. We weren't really expecting to finish in the top 10 because it's so competitive.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Tell me what it was like, Arvind. What were some of the questions you were asked? What was the competition like?
The questions were regarding global events and important issues around the world, including current events. And there were questions such as who is the president of Turkey right now? Questions like that.
Who came up with the name Hoosier Baghdaddy? That's awesome. I love it.
Oh, that was me.
That was you. Okay.
Because Baghdaddy is the leader of ISIS right now, so it's a pun.
Very, very creative. Ashley Malone and Haley Lee, the two female members of the team, tell us about your experience doing this.
Well, we went to D.C., and so we were there for maybe 4 or 3 days. So even though we were studying for part of the time, we also spent a lot of the time touring around D.C., so that was really fun.
Your first trip?
No, I've been
before. You've been before?
Yes.
Okay, so now how much rigorous preparation went into this? Because you were competing against the top kids from around the country, right?
Well, we spent a lot of time getting ready, especially in the weeks heading up to the competition. We were basically studying on our own. And then once we got to D.C., we spent a lot of time studying together as we went touring around. We would take breaks from visiting like the monuments and different places around D.C. to just study together.
Now, I'm looking at some of the trivia questions that you had to answer. Peace and conflict in today's world, combating infectious disease, the European Union, countering violent extremism, and on and on. So you got 80 out of 100 points. Is that right?
That sounds right.
Is that about right?
Yeah.
Do you remember any questions you got wrong? Or is it all a blur now?
They asked us a question about a disaster in Chile. Like, what kind of disaster was it? And we said
it was an earthquake, but it was a flood.
Oh, how could you miss that? No, I'm just kidding. You guys are so smart, and you are obviously on to really wonderful things in your lives. Let's go around the table. What are all your college plans?
I'm going to Cornell University in the School of Engineering.
Of course you are. How about you?
I'm going to Harvard, and I'm planning on majoring in biology.
And they'll be lucky to have you. How about the guys?
I'm going to UF for pre-med.
Okay.
I'm just a junior.
You're just a junior. You haven't taken over the world yet.
After this, I'm going to White Way for Cheeseburger Wednesday, and then I have an IB philosophy exam at noon.
So I see who the kidder is in this group. Okay.
Someone had to come up with the name.
Well, it's so exciting to meet all of you, and you did Jacksonville proud. Very, very cool, and I wish you nothing but the best in what's sure to be an amazing college career. Thanks for being here, and enjoy your summer, by the way, guys.
Thank you for having us.
They are the Stanton team. Who's your Baghdaddy? Ashley Malone, Arvind Sami, Walker Miller, and Haley Lee placing in the top 10 at the Academic World Quest in Washington. Congrats to them. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Next on 1A, critics are comparing today's events to Watergate, but is the ghost of Richard Nixon really haunting Donald Trump? I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.